Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKusick, and it's time for this week's Know Your Foe episode. Of course, the Ravens playing the Commanders this Sunday, and joining us to talk about them and their scheme and personnel is Mark Bullock. Mark, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thanks. How are you?
No complaints here. Mark, one of the really good NFL follows. Give him a follow at Mark Bullock NFL. I've got that correct. There's no other punctuation in there.
No, that's right. You've got that right.
All right. Outstanding. So great time to be a Commanders fan right now. Obviously, they seem to be a team very much in ascension. Maybe talk to us a little bit about the offseason moves they made. And I think you have to culminate with talking about the draft of Jaden Daniels.
Yeah. So, I mean, the biggest offseason move, I guess, happened technically last year, which was Dan Snyder selling the team to Josh Harris and his partnership group. They spent last year kind of just evaluating all the people that were in the building. And then this offseason that they went in and basically dug out everything and completely rebuilt the team. And that started with hiring Adam Peters away from the 49ers as their general manager. And then Adam Peters led the search for the head coaching search and the coaching staff. And then that obviously led to Dan Quinn. There was the flirtation with Ben Johnson with the Lions, but and that kind of looks like Ben Johnson turned them down from my understanding. And obviously that would be the Commanders would put out the statement that Dan Quinn was the kind of guy the whole way. But from my understanding, they genuinely were very, very high on Dan Quinn. Ben Johnson had an interview with Washington and it didn't particularly go well. So there's a little bit of dispute about that. But anyway, they ended up with Dan Quinn, and Dan Quinn's built out a really good staff. With obviously Cliff Kingsbury as the offensive coordinator, and Joe Witt Jr. came with him from Dallas as the defensive coordinator, and they've got some big names from Seattle with Dan Quinn's time in Seattle, like Ken Norton Jr. as the linebackers coach, and they managed to get Anthony Lynn across from the 49ers as a run game coordinator, running backs coach. So they've picked off pieces from around the league. They've assembled a really good coaching staff. And then they went attacking the roster, and the roster had a massive overhaul. And I've not seen an overhaul in one offseason as large as what Washington did this year. I think there was something like 30 or 33 new players this year on the final roster compared to last year. So it's a big, big change. Sorry, I need 1 minute. I've got. Sorry to interrupt this. There is cats being mischievous. There. Sorry. Right, let me get back where I was. Okay. Right. Sorry. Yeah, so they had a huge overhaul in terms of the roster. So it was something like 33 players that are new on the final roster, and so that includes the big names like Bobby Wagner, Frankie Louvu on defense, Jeremy Chin. Offensively, they brought in Tyler Biotish at center from the Dallas Cowboys. He's been probably one of their main additions on offense, but they've also added some kind of shrewd veteran guys. They got Noah Brown on waivers from the Texans, and he's become quite a good contributor. So they've added quite a lot of new faces. It's been quite an overhaul of the roster. And then they went obviously into the draft, and they had the big, everyone made a lot out of the golf, Top Golf thing, where they hosted all the quarterbacks before, like the week before the draft at Top Golf. And everyone thought, oh, well, they haven't made their mind up yet. It was pretty clear that they liked Jaden Daniels a lot. And it seems so far that they are pretty, pretty right in that decision. Yeah. So
kind of the second year in a row that the number two pick really looked a lot better than the number one pick after, you know, a very short period of time. But CJ Stroud clearly has way outplayed Bryce Young in the league, and now Jaden Daniels. Although Caleb Williams has not been bad, has been one of the better quarterbacks in the entire league.
Yeah, it's been above and beyond any expectations of basically anyone in Washington. And I think they built a really, really good plan around him, where they, from the offset, as soon as he came in the building, they made sure that he was not exposed to anything. Like the thing I can compare it to most is when they drafted RG3 back in 2012. When he came into the building, everything was about RG3. He was at the front of, he was in every press conference. He was at the front of every media availability thing. He was front and center on any kind of poster or advert or everything like that. He was the guy, and they were happy to put him on in front of everything. For Washington this time round, they've been really protective of him. And yes, he obviously has media obligations and he does his interviews once a week, but he, for the most part, we've not heard a great deal from him. It's been kind of the trusted veterans that go out and do media obligations. And it's been, you know, Dan Quinn has been very much shielding Jaden Daniels from being in the spotlight. And it's been, well, we're looking at the whole team and the defense is coming along, and we've been building up the offensive line, and we're trying to build an entire offense rather than just make it all be about Jaden Daniels. So he's been really well shielded, and they built around him very well, and that has set him up for success. But even they wouldn't have expected him to be quite as good as he has been. And they were very, very high on him. I don't know. There are some reports that say they would have taken him that number one overall over Caleb Williams. I don't know if that is true. But I know they were extremely high on him, and they would have, if there was no Caleb Williams in the draft, they would have very, very happily taken Jaden Daniels number one overall if they'd had that pick. So yeah, he has exceeded all expectations so far, and they couldn't be happier with him.
It's certainly exciting. The Commanders are in fantastic shape in terms of the cap. Still have about $25 million this year. They could potentially roll most of that into next year if they don't make a move. They certainly could be a buyer at the trade deadline. Nothing is preventing them from doing that. And they've got, I think, 100 and change next year, 100, 120 even. So yeah. It's a ridiculous amount.
Yeah, they are very, very well set. Like they were good, well set coming into this offseason. Like that was the big appeal to a guy like Adam Peters to leave an organization like the 49ers that were competing for Super Bowls. He could run his own team. He had the second overall pick to pick whatever quarterback he wanted. He had basically a complete roster that he could just take to the ground and build up as he wanted. They had 9 picks in the draft before they did any trades last year. And then they had all this cap space, as you mentioned, and it's cap space not just for this year, it was cap space next year and the year after. The cap is really well set for them. They only have 2 or 3 guys under contract on really expensive contracts, particularly long term, and the rest is all stuff that they can get out of pretty easily if they want to. So they are very well set in cap space, and I think this year, going into the year, they wanted to kind of see how Jaden Daniels played, and then you would see them in next year kind of do what the Texans have done with CJ Stroud, where they've gone, okay, we know CJ Stroud's our guy. This is our time to use our cap space and use the fact that we have a rookie quarterback contract to be aggressive and go make the deal for Stephon Diggs and that kind of move. I do wonder if Washington comes out this week with another win, they start to think, okay, we could accelerate the process a little bit and maybe at the deadline find a decent deal where we can make a move for a guy. We have the cap space to do it. I'm not saying they would go all in on a Devontae Adams type. They would probably still have a long-term view. because Adam Peters and Dan Quinn have both preached that they are building for the long term. So they're not going to just go all in on an older player and throw a first round pick away. I think they would still value keeping their higher draft picks, but
I'll just say it won't take anywhere near a first round pick. If you'll take Davante Adams off the Raiders' hand, I honestly think that the final price, if you take the entire cap hit from them, is more like a five. It might be a six, yeah. but it won't be much at all. If they take the whole contract, it might be a two. And there's a bunch of teams that are in position for that. But to me, a team like the Commanders makes a lot of sense if you feel like their receiving unit needs that kind of a boost, and particularly at the X.
Yeah, and I think that's where you would question, do they necessarily need to? That they have Terry McCorn, Noah Brown's come along really well. I'm sure we'll get into the full receiving group as we go through the roster, but and they drafted Luke McCaffrey, Christian McCaffrey's younger brother, and they really like how he's coming along. So I don't think they would necessarily feel the need to go out for an older profile like a Davante Adams. I think I don't necessarily know if T. Higgins is the kind of guy that they would necessarily want, but that younger profile is a guy that they could extend and expect to be around Jaden Daniels for 4 to 5 years rather than 2 or 3 years like Adams. That would be someone that I think would appeal to them a little bit more, but obviously then the cost becomes
massive investment. Yeah,
exactly. So, so that would be the kind of move I think they could make. But at this point in time, I think they're probably still in a kind of long-term approach. He's exceeding our expectations, but we're still going game by game. And we're still thinking that this week, we want to see where he's at, how he responds to a really good Ravens team. Because this will be the best team that he's faced so far, and then go from there.
Let's talk specifically about Daniels and what's been great about his game, and maybe for people who saw him play at LSU, and I think that's a lot of fans. Maybe what's different about him at the NFL level?
Yeah, well, for anyone that's seen him play at LSU, and I'm sure Ravens fans are familiar with the profile of quarterback, given Lamar Jackson, that it's been a very common comp for him. You know, he's a very good passer in his own right. He can throw a beautiful deep ball, and he's good at working through his progressions, better than most people give him credit for. But he is an electric runner, and that brings a dynamic threat to the offense, both as a scrambler and going off script, but also just in the running game, if you want to build a running game around that, and that they have incorporated that into the running game, not quite to the extent that the Ravens do with Lamar, where they will have Lamar take the ball up the middle between the tackles and do those kind of schemes. They've been still more perimeter runs with the quarterback and general read option stuff, but Cliff Kingsbury has kind of flirted with some of that stuff. And in the first week, they ran a guard tackle counter out of empty, and Jaden Daniels it was an RPO. Jaden could throw a bubble screen or run it himself, and they had a really good look to run it, but one of the offensive linemen missed their blocks, and he got hit. And very quickly after the game, the staff all got questioned, why are we running Jaden Daniels up the middle and letting him get hit and that kind of thing. And so that has kind of gone away a little bit since the opening game. But so it is in the playbook. I just don't know how much they're going to use that. But in terms of stuff that he has been doing better in the league than he did in college, in college he was known as a guy that would scramble to run rather than scramble to pass. And in the first few games of the season, certainly in the opener against the Bucks, he did a lot of, as soon as he felt he was under pressure, he would start scrambling, and he was just eyes down, becomes a runner. Mm-hmm. And then kind of ignores open receivers. In the last 2 weeks, or sort of last 2 or 3 weeks, he's gotten a lot better at becoming a scrambler to pass, keeping his eyes down the field. The best example of that was this week against the Browns on the opening. No, it was not the opening drive. The second drive, it was 3rd and 9. They sent a big blitz at him. He was overloaded to the right side, and he managed to scramble out, avoid the pressure, rolled to his right, and kept his eyes down the field, saw Terry McLaurin running open, and threw a 66-yard bomb to him. So And McLaurin probably should have managed to break through an ankle tackle to turn it into a touchdown. Unfortunately, didn't. But that is the kind of thing that Jaden Daniels is doing a lot more consistently these past few weeks. So that is one aspect where he's been better in the NFL than he has been in college. Another has just been his complete command of the offense. I didn't expect him to be... I saw at times at LSU when they had certain looks. If it was cover zero, he could audible into a specific slot fade and hit that. He loved throwing those slot fades in college. But what we've seen so far, and there was a series in the two-minute drill at the end of the half against the Browns this week, which was phenomenal, where on the first play of the series, receiver De'Ami Brown ran a go route down the sideline. Now, he wasn't necessarily the primary. Jaden Daniels threw the ball over the middle to Zach Ertz, and it was a good ball, good read. Ertz unfortunately dropped it. But Jaden Daniels clearly saw that De'Ami Brown had won his matchup. And they were in a no huddle. It was at the end of the half, so it was no huddle up tempo. So they quickly got up and ran another play and converted to make it to move the chains. And then on the next play, Jaden Daniels scrambled and ran out of bounds. And he happened to run out of bounds next to Cliff Kingsbury. And as he came back onto the field, he turned and said to Cliff Kingsbury, "Hey, we had that shot a few plays ago. Call it again, and I'll hit it this time." And Cliff said, "Okay, I got you." They called the shot on the very next play. They showed the exact same look. De'Ami Brown beat his guy down the sideline, and Jaden threw it and dropped it in a bucket, and it was a 41-yard touchdown. So there is a high football IQ there, and there is not just a high football IQ. It's an awareness. It's retaining that that memory of, you know, I saw that thing a few plays ago. He had the presence of mind when he was scrambling to the sideline to come back and tell Cliff, "Let's get back to that play." And then the ability to just execute it. It was a really, really good series. And it's something that I think speaks to the football brain that he has.
That's very impressive for a rookie quarterback, certainly. And we all remember how great RG3 was in that first year until he got hit, frankly, by a Haloti Ngata, really, that ruined his career in a lot of ways. But it's also RG3, after seeing him with the Ravens as a backup quarterback and seeing him at the podium and obviously on all his broadcasting duties he's done after football, he is absolutely unbelievably composed at the podium. I don't remember if that's the guy he was in 2012 or not, but I can see a reason why you'd put RG3 on the podium immediately if he was anything like the guy he was when he got to the Ravens, you know, several years later.
He was very, very charismatic, and you could tell that he had a future in media pretty much straight away. Like he enjoyed being in the spotlight, and I think that is possibly part of what his downfall in Washington in the end. But he definitely does it very well. He speaks very well. He's very charismatic, as I said, and he talks a great game. And so I completely understand why they would put him in front of the cameras and let him do the media obligations. But it just meant that there was that much more pressure around him. Whereas what we've seen them do with Jaden Daniels is, Jaden Daniels speaks perfectly well at the podium, but they just limit his exposure. They don't need to make it all about him yet, because clearly it's going to be all about him at a certain point if he continues playing the way he is. But they don't need to make it that yet, so they aren't. And they're trying to make it about the team, and he's doing a really good job of buying into that culture and also making it about the team. And he's the first to recognize that he's still leaving a lot of plays on the field. He's still a rookie, and he's still making mistakes, and he still will make mistakes. But he is doing more than enough to offset those mistakes so far, and it's been really fun to watch.
All right, let's go through some of the rest of the offense, the wide receiver core. Talk us through them, who they have, and how they line up.
Yeah, so the number one receiver is Terry McLaurin. I think most people are pretty familiar with him. A very underrated receiver in the league. Some people question whether he's a true number one receiver.
Do you even know what that means when people say it? I get so upset with it because I think if I said to somebody who said, well, he's not a number one receiver, I said, okay, make a list of every single number one receiver in the league. And they'd make up a list of 12 names or something. And I'd say, okay, if there's only 12 in the league, then you understand only 12 out of 32 teams get one at most, unless some team has two, you know, so I hate the designation.
No, I understand. I am with you on that. And in this offense as well, it's quite unique in that the X receiver isn't always the X receiver. And by that, I mean Cliff Kingsbury is known for always lining up his number one receiver, whoever that is. When in Arizona, it was DeAndre Hopkins. Here, it's Terry McLaurin. He's known for trying to line him up out as the outside left receiver. Now that can mean in a tight split, still close to the formation, or it can mean outside the numbers or anywhere in between, but it's typically the furthest outside receiver to the left of the formation. But that isn't always the X receiver. Kingsbury kind of flips the X and the Z receiver around based on the hash mark that they're on. So if they're on the right hash and they're in a trips formation to the left, then the outside receiver would be Terry McLaurin, and he suddenly becomes the Z receiver instead of the X. So the outside receivers have to learn both the X and Z roles, and that allows them to run a different set of routes compared to what they would normally do as just an X. But it also means that at times when you would probably want to isolate a guy up one-on-one and you're on the right hash mark and that one-on-one would be to the right, suddenly your normal Z receiver is becoming your X receiver. So there's some downsides to that. And it's a bit of a quirk of the offense, but Terry McLaurin's their number one guy. That's the guy that they're going to go to in most situations. Noah Brown, as I talked about earlier, they got him after the Texans cut him before the season. And he has very quickly worked his way up to receiver two, although he was injured last week and it is uncertain whether he will make it this week. That's a question mark still. He kind of appeared on the injury report late last week and missed the game. So we'll see whether he makes it. If he doesn't, De'Ami Brown is the guy that will play outside when they want to do, as I say, that kind of X and Z flip stuff. He will play outside. Otherwise, they will split time with Luke McCaffrey, the rookie, and Alamide Zaccheaus. Those two have kind of been splitting time as the slot receiver / the third receiver. And sometimes they've both been on the field with Terry McLaurin when McLaurin's been able to be the X isolated on one side of the field, then one of them plays the Z, one of them will play the slot. And so those are the main four characters on the receiver group. That's five actually, because I include Noah Brown. But those are the main group of receivers. The ones that have been getting the bulk of the work, as I say, have been McLaurin and Noah Brown. De'Ami Brown's more of just a deep threat at this point in his career. He can get you on a quick slant, but he's not going to be someone that runs these intricate routes timing up stuff and running the curls and the comebacks and stuff. He's going to be a guy that if they are putting him on the field, he's either there to block or run down the field and try to get a vertical.
So both of the Browns I see are averaging over 10 yards per target right now. So De'Ami Brown's only had 8 targets a year, but for a deep threat, pretty remarkable to catch 7 for 94 yards, and Noah Brown 10 for 111, 10 targets for 111 yards. He's over 11 yards per target. And then that doesn't even get to Austin Eckler, who's had, you know, almost 14 yards a target this year.
Yeah, exactly. It's been quite remarkable, and Eckler has been used almost as a slot receiver at times, even though he's a running back, and they've been, a lot of his stuff has come after the catch. It's been like screens and sure, stuff like that. And they've set up screens really well in the screen game. He has a really nice, they keep praising what they call a drop step, where he will spot up as a check down underneath. And as you throw him the ball, he starts opening himself up and almost dropping to turn himself. So as he catches the ball, he's ready to turn up the field and gain yards immediately. And that's something they really like about him. That's something that Kingsbury and Dan Quinn have praised about him a couple times in press conferences. So he's a weapon that they really like out of the backfield. And they absolutely love tight end Zach Ertz as well. Now, he doesn't necessarily have the production to back up that, but he is someone that they absolutely love, and Jaden Daniels has a really good connection with and trusts a lot. And I think, in fact, Jaden Daniels' interception against the Browns was kind of a little bit him trying to force the ball to Ertz rather than this is the right read. So he definitely trusts Ertz a lot, especially in the red zone and in tight situations. So that's another one of their main receiving threats. And in fact, to the extent that when they were trying to help protect against Myles Garrett, a lot of their protection plan was running backs chipping Garrett or even the two slot receivers I talked about, McCaffrey and Zaccheaus. Mm-hmm. And Zaccheaus is only 5'8" and 108 pounds, but he was one that they used to try to motion in and chip Myles Garrett so that Zach Ertz can go and run a route because that's how much they value Ertz as a route runner.
If you look at Ertz's statistics, in particular yards per target, you can make the argument this is shaping up as his best season since 2018. He's 34 years old now, by the way. He's been available in trades for the past decade, it seems. No, seriously, for several years now, of his last years with the Eagles, he was certainly available. A guy who is having almost a rejuvenation of his career now in Washington this year.
Yeah, and he's someone that Cliff kind of recruited. Cliff obviously traded for him in Arizona, mm-hmm. They seem to get on really well. They seem to form a really good relationship. And Ertz pretty much when he signed said, I'm here for Cliff Kingsbury, essentially. He's been really effusive in his praise for Kingsbury this offseason and saying how Kingsbury is really rejuvenated from his time in Arizona. And he's got this new level of energy and excitement about him. And that's kind of spread to the rest of the offense, and Ertz in particular is kind of feeling that level of energy and excitement, and that comes from Dan Quinn and how he's built this staff and Adam Peters, how he's built the roster. So he is rejuvenated and he's being used in ways that he likes to be used. He's not one of the frontline blockers as the tight ends. They have two other tight ends in John Bates and rookie Ben Sinnott that do the majority of the blocking. But they do occasionally run multiple tight end sets and ask him to block, and he still shows good effort in those blocks. It's not like he's selling it in and just trying to be a receiver as a 34-year-old probably could at this point mm-hmm. in his career. He's showing the willingness and the desire to put the effort in, even if the technique is probably lacking at this point.
Okay. All right, fair enough. Let's move on and talk about we'll talk about the other running backs. So did they run some pony still? That was a big component of the Washington backfield in 2020 when the teams last met.
Yes, they have been doing that. The issue they've had the past few weeks is that both Brian Robinson and Austin Ekeler have missed time with injury. Now, Brian Robinson managed to play last week against the Browns, but they didn't give many touches in the second half, and that was partially because of his injury. Going into the game, he was listed as doubtful, and he managed to suit up. He didn't really practice throughout the week, but he managed to suit up, and he played the first half, and then they were leading at halftime, and they kind of said, okay, well, we can give you a break. We can afford to give you a break, and especially once they got to the fourth quarter when they – bench Jaden Daniels because they were that far ahead. Brian Robinson wasn't getting any more carries at that point. So he should be healthy this week, and he should be ready to take a bigger workload. Austin Ekeler was coming back. He came back last week from a concussion the week before. He missed the week 4 game against the Cardinals because he got concussed against the Bengals in week 3. So he missed week 4, but he was back healthy week 5. And I think they kind of slowly reintroduced him. He's been a revelation, really, Austin Ekeler. I think everyone kind of thought, and myself included, was kind of doubtful based on last year that he seemed to have lost a step last year. Now, he came in this offseason saying, no, I was actually playing hurt last year, and I'll be back to my normal self this year. And everyone said, kind of, yeah, okay, we'll wait and see. And he has come out and looked every bit of the Austin Ekeler that everyone knows and loves from, you know, if you ever played fantasy football, having him and that kind of thing. So he's been really explosive, really dynamic, as I talked about, as a passing threat. In the screen game, he's been phenomenal. As a check down target, he picks up plenty of yards after the catch. And his ability as a blocker as well. He throws himself at guys, and he's made some really impressive blocks. That obviously gives him in good favor with the coaches and with Jaden Daniels, that they trust him to protect. And that's important for a guy that, yes, will take occasional carries, but generally that's Brian Robinson's role, is to run the ball. And Austin Ekwa will be the kind of pass catching guy and pass protecting guy.
And pass protecting guy. Okay, I was kind of wondering how often he got a touch relative to his snaps, but I look at his per snap production is off the charts this year, and I would have never guessed this would happen. But he's got a 63% success rate, which means it's only 19 carries. That's 12 for 19. He's succeeded on in terms of keeping you up with the sticks. I kind of wonder if he was a short yardage back, if they'd used him some in that regard. And then, of course, he's caught all 11 balls thrown to him for 13.7 yards per target, which is fantastic. So. That's a great comeback year.
Yeah, it's been really good so far. And he's not really been used specifically in short yardage. It's been kind of, if Brian Robinson taps out, he will tap in and he will take some carries. And he did convert a 4th-and-2 last week, but that was in a two-back set with Brian Robinson was the running back and Ekeler lined up as a slot receiver and took a jet sweep and cut that upfield. So they will show plenty of two back sets. That is something they really, really like and they want to get into more. But the last few weeks with Ekeler missing 1 week and then Brian Robinson being kind of limited last week, they weren't really able to get into it as much as they'd like to. But it is a group that they like, a personnel group that they really, really like is the having those two on the field. Because both were able to run it. And obviously Jaden Daniels is a threat to run himself. So that gives them three legitimate options to carry the ball on a given play. But also Ekeler can move out and become a slot receiver and they can do some funky things off of that. It's a package they really like. And I think if Brian Robinson pulls up okay this week, I think it's something you'll see plenty of this week as well.
All right. Maybe Tuck, do they use a fullback at all anymore in this offense?
They don't have a designated fullback. They do use one of the tight ends as a fullback quite often. Mm-hmm. They will use 12 personnel and 13 personnel. And then Ben Sinnott, their rookie, is someone that Adam Peters actually, after the draft, compared to Kyle Juszczyk in San Francisco as kind of this movable piece. He sees him as kind of a guy that can obviously play tight end, but line up as a fullback, line up as a H-back, move around. And obviously that comes in handy when you're looking at the quarterback run game, when you're asking a guy to kind of sift across and then arc for a read option keeper and that kind of thing. That's something that Ben Sinnott's done quite a lot of. So if they do line up in a 12 personnel or 13 personnel and put a fullback in there, it will be Ben Sinnott. The tight end, number 82. Occasionally, John Bates, the other tight end, will move into the backfield if they go into a pistol look. They've shown a bit of that as well, but it's mainly so they do get the effect of a fullback, but they don't have a designated fullback on the roster.
It looks like Sinnott has not yet had an NFL target. Is that correct?
He has had plays designed for him. He has plays that Jaden Daniels has not seen him running open. He is someone that they really, really, really like. It's not for a lack of trying. They have called some shots, one in particular against, I think it was the Giants week two, or maybe it was week three against the Bengals. It was a very similar play to something CJ Stroud did quite a lot of, where they'd use a little play action fake and roll the quarterback out to the right. And they'd have a receiver running deep and then back across to the left and the quarterback would pull up and throw it back across the field. And that was a play they had designed to Ben Sinnott, and Sinnott ran it really well. Jaden Daniels just didn't see him and took off running himself. So they have called some plays for him, but they have yet to get him the ball. I don't think he has a target. He certainly doesn't have a catch, but I don't think he has a target yet either.
Okay, now Ravens fans would, I think, pretty much agree that a lot of the weakness of the team in the early weeks has been against the pass, but not really against the cornerbacks as much. The big problem has been the two safeties being out of position some, not making plays some, not closing up the gaps between level two and three, and also an inside linebacker where Mahomes in particular kind of picked them apart in terms of beating their inside linebackers on the field. Now, the Ravens have made some changes since then. They've gone to a dime look, so they don't usually have two linebackers out there on third down. They only have Roquan Smith out there with Kyle Hamilton as the dime. And so the question would be, how would you look for a team like Washington with the strengths they have to attack that weakness, or will they just more or less play their own game because it's been so successful?
Yeah, I think they will primarily start trying to play their game. They have gone into every game trying to do the kind of, I guess, traditional, but not necessarily the traditional way about it, of establishing the run and trying to set up stuff to get back to with play action stuff later in the game. And the way they've gone about it, rather than, I guess, the traditional Kyle Shanahan way of setting up different outside zone runs and then using bootlegs and play action shots off of that, Kingsbury's been more, we'll mix in different personnel packages, and sometimes we'll use 11 personnel, sometimes it'll be 12, sometimes 13, sometimes it'll be four receivers and no tight ends, sometimes it'll be two backs and really mix up the personnel groups. And then they'll be running their kind of, they have quite a variance of gap scheme runs that they've been using, and they've been layering in new ones each week. And they've been pairing them with a lot of like bubble screens and tunnel screens, making them into RPOs. And it's essentially become box counts for Jaden Daniels, where, you know, if he's got three defenders outside over a two-man bubble screen, he's going to hand the ball off inside. And if he's got two on two on the outside, he'll throw the bubble screen and they'll take their 3 or 4 yards either way. And that's keeping them ahead of the chains. And that's the way they've been successful. Now, the Browns this week did show kind of a blueprint of, they're going to put everyone up on the line of scrimmage. They're going to play aggressive press coverage to stop those quick passes. They're going to load the box to try to stop the run. And it took Jaden Daniels a little bit to adjust. But then he found when teams went that way, he could scramble a lot more, pick up some big explosive plays with his legs, and they could hit some shots down the field. And we saw a couple, the two I've already talked about, with 66-yarder to Terry McLaurin and the 41-yarder touchdown to De'Ami Brown. And there was a couple more they could have had that they didn't quite connect on. So I think that's going to be the way they're going to try to go about it. Now, if you're saying there's a specific weakness at linebacker, now Cliff Kingsbury really does like to attack weaknesses. So I would expect if that is a weakness that he has identified, he would probably look to get into those two and three tight end personnel sets and try to find that matchup and exploit that matchup. And that could be, you know, spreading out the defense, going empty. He will use tempo a lot. That is something they very rarely huddle. They use a lot of no huddle and they will go up tempo. They won't always go up tempo, but they will have the threat of going up tempo so that you can't adjust your play calls and disguise personnel stuff. Yeah. Exactly. So they will be looking to use tempo and the threat of tempo. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I just meant in terms of getting on the field, getting to the line of scrimmage. Are they trying to get the line of scrimmage at 18 or 20 seconds left? Call only a look in the huddle and then the play is called at the line of scrimmage? Or how are they dealing with maintaining tempo with a rookie quarterback? Because it seems like you often have to cede a lot of control to the quarterback in those situations, or have some very simple plays run that don't take a lot of communication.
Yeah, they are very much looking to get lined up straight away. They hardly ever huddle. They basically huddle maybe the first play of the drive, obviously. And then if there is a key situation, if it's, you know, third and 10 or whatever, they'll huddle up and call a play in the huddle at that point. But for the most part, they have been putting it on Jaden Daniels to communicate stuff. And it's been a lot of hand signals.
One more thing is that the 1996 Ravens, when they first came into the league, wanted to basically go to no huddle as often as they could. And they're almost unstoppable in no huddle, similar, but not quite as good probably to what the Commanders are right now. What they found was that their defense couldn't really hold up to it. And I'm looking at the Commanders defense, you know, which is obviously the less strong unit on this team. At least we could say it as nicely as possible in that way. Are they really capable of holding up to potentially losing snap count or having to play a lot of plays consecutively after short drives in terms of time off the field, give them the respite?
So the short answer to your question is we don't know yet, because the offense has done a remarkably good job of staying on the field despite going no huddle and up tempo. What they have done a really good job of is varying the tempo. So they constantly go no huddle. They constantly get themselves up to the line of scrimmage in a line ready to snap the ball, but they will then quite often let the clock run down and let Jane Daniels see what the defense is doing. Cliff will have his hand signals and stuff from the sideline, and they will figure out a play once they're up at the line of scrimmage. Or, you know, if they get a particular look, like you talked about, if the Ravens have a weakness at linebacker and they get two linebackers on the field, they will go no huddle to make sure that they keep attacking that. But if it's not that they want to attack a certain look, it's that they want to prevent the defense from getting into complex looks. So they will get themselves lined up, and then they will let the play clock run down, and they will quite often get down to, they'll even substitute. So they'll switch a personnel group. They just won't huddle. So you'll see guys going on and off the field quite a lot, and they'll just, the offensive line, as soon as the play is done, they'll be running up, getting themselves set in their positions. Jaden Daniels will be there communicating, as I kind of talked about with Terry McLaurin, always being on the left side.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
He'll just stay out on the left side and he'll just get a hand signal. Whoever the other outside receiver is, he'll stay on the outside. And that's when you'll see the kind of flexible guys, the tight ends, the slot receivers, the second running back, if they've got a second running back. Those guys will be the guys that will be getting the bulk of the communication as they run on off the field.
Now, has any other opposing coach or defense coordinator tried to take advantage of that situation and generate delay of game penalties off of that by substituting late?
This is something that only the Browns last week started to do. And it was quite effective, but they never got one of those penalties. So they hadn't seen it throughout the first 4 weeks. Every other team that they played were kind of like, oh God, we got to get ourselves substituted as quickly as possible and kind of played into their hands a little bit. Mm-hmm. But the Browns recognize that, okay, if you're going to substitute, we're just going to slowly walk off the field, and their defenders would just take their time. They wouldn't even jog. They would literally just walk off the field.
Yeah.
And that got the play clock down to sort of 4 or 5 seconds. I think the one time they had to snap the ball immediately as a defensive tackle took his last step off the field, and the clock was down at 2. So that was the closest it's got. And I would expect more teams would be trying to do that. But I think that is more down to the fact that Washington were late substituting in a couple of those situations. I think Kingsbury could do a little bit better of a job being more decisive in the personnel group he wants to go to. When they are rolling, they are very good at getting the personnel group on, subbing them off really quick, and they'll be lined up with 25, 30 seconds. And even if your defensive tackle is just walking off the field, substituting out, there's still going to be 10, 15 seconds to snap the ball at that point. So
I'm going to go ahead and guarantee to you that the Ravens will try and do that. They're exceptionally good at the late substitution game, and the Browns probably picked it up from them. It would be the way I would point out, but they've drawn a couple of delay game penalties over the last 10 games or so, doing exactly that. And they lollygag onto the field, and the official will stand right over the ball. They'll get it timed up. So just a couple seconds left on the clock, and then they turn and they allow the play to happen. And then all of a sudden the clock hits zero and somebody throws a flag and it's too late.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a good tactic, and it's one that Washington hasn't seen or hadn't seen until the Browns did it a few times this week. So you would hope that they would have an answer for that. And that would probably be, as I say, to try to be more decisive with how they're substituting guys in and get that in quicker. But yeah, they just don't huddle. They don't want to huddle. They prefer to let Jaden Daniels communicate everything at the line of scrimmage, and they trust him to be able to do that. And so far, he's doing a phenomenal job of controlling it all.
Let's flip it over to the defense here and talk a little bit about the things. The question I always like to start with on defense is, what is the usual pass defense look? So you're in 3rd and 7+. Who do they like to throw out there? Are they a committed nickel team? Do they go to a dime? What do they do?
Yeah, so this is a complex answer because they aren't able to do what they want to do at this point in time. What they want to do is replicate what Dan Quinn and Joe Witt Jr. did at the Cowboys the last few years, which is play a bunch of man coverage, blitz basically everyone else, keep a single safety in the middle of the field, match up personnel-wise. So if an offense requires a dime matchup, then that's what they'll do. They'll if it's just nickel, then that's what they'll do. But they will match up personnel wise, and they will just play man coverage, cover one, single deep safety, and essentially blitz everyone else and stunt people up front and try to force that ball out really quickly. They've not been able to do that because their corners have not been able to hold up in man coverage. So it has been an experiment the past few weeks of how they have gone about doing, trying to find ways of protecting the corners while still generating the pressure that they want. So they've been mixing and matching personnel. They typically, on the back end, it will be mostly a nickel defense. They haven't played any base at all. It's always been nickel. Or they'll play a big nickel with a third safety instead of a slot corner. And that tends to be their two different personnel groups on the back end.
The big nickel is something they would do in response to 12 personnel, probably with a split tight end to get them on the field, or they do it against a big slot. What's been their profile there?
Yes. So earlier in the season, they were just going nickel against everything. So even when teams would line up 12 personnel and two tight ends and run heavy look, they would just ask their slot corner to just essentially become a linebacker at that point. they really liked their slot corner, which is Mikey Sanders, a rookie that he drafted in the second round out of Michigan. But he's undersized, and they soon found that he would struggle with the run fits when they did that. So he's now moved to outside corner. They've got Noah Igbinogene, that has moved into the slot. He was a first round pick, I think, of the Dolphins a few years ago, and then he got traded to the Cowboys last year. So he was with Quinn and Witt there, and they brought him over this year. And he he was mainly meant to be a special teamer, but he's kind of worked his way into being the slot corner now. And he's got a little bit more size, so they trust him a little bit more and that kind of thing. But the last few weeks, they have started to be like, okay, we can't just keep asking our slot corner to fit the run against 12 personnel. So that has been when they have been subbing in an extra big nickel instead of a normal nickel. And that would be Percy Butler would be the third safety that would come on the field. And they have been playing some dime recently too, as well, where one of Percy Butler or Jeremy Chin comes down and plays dime linebacker. And then they still have their three corners and their three safeties. And the personnel gets a little bit more confusing up front because you have a different mix and match of guys that they like to move around. But on the back end, it has generally been either a big nickel against 12 personnel the last few weeks, typically nickel against most looks, and then some dime package stuff as well when they need it.
Okay. All right. Fantastic. Very well explained, by the way. Let's talk pass rush, scheme and personnel. Maybe you start from outside in on the defensive line.
Yeah. So on the edge, one of their big free agent acquisitions was Dorrance Armstrong, again from the Cowboys. So again, coming with Dan Quinn and Joe Witt Jr. And he's been a guy that in Dallas was really good as the kind of secondary rusher to Michael Parsons. So obviously Parsons drew a lot of pressure and they like to move him around all over the place. And Dorrance Armstrong was someone that they also like to move around all over the place and let him stunt and kind of be the second guy. And so you'd quite often see both Parsons and Armstrong stunt together, and Armstrong would be the guy that would go first and free up Parsons to loop around him. Now in Washington, they don't have that elite guy like a Michael Parsons. So he's had to transition into a little bit more of a regular defensive end. And part of that is also down to, as I say, they don't have the corners that they trust on the outside to be able to blitz a load of guys and run a load of stunts. So they've been using a little bit more regular as a defensive end look with Armstrong. The other starting defensive end would be Cleveland Farrell, the former first round pick of the Raiders. But he has been dealing with an injury the past few weeks. So he's been out. So they've been subbing in. They moved former first round pick linebacker Jamin Davis to defensive end this offseason. That's been kind of a hit and miss move. They liked his athleticism. I think it's more they didn't like him at linebacker. And so they're trying to find a space for him on the roster, and it's kind of not really worked, but he's had a few flashes. They have a seventh round rookie in Javonte John Baptiste that they like. He's a kind of raw, very raw prospect, but big, long, physical, kind of Dan Quinn profile, a kind of guy that can move up and down the line. And then Dante Fowler, another former first round pick of the Jaguars a few years ago, a guy that is another very, very big Dan Quinn guy. In fact, there was a quote with him a few years ago where he said he would be very happy if the only head coach he ever played for again was Dan Quinn. And that has been the case. He's come along quite well recently. And so it's been typically in run situations, they would use certainly Dorrance Armstrong would be one defensive end. On the other side, they would either use Dante Fowler or Javonte John Baptiste, or the last few weeks they've been working in a third defensive tackle and then letting linebacker Frankie Louvu shift to the edge as kind of an edge rusher and play on the edge and give them kind of effectively a five-man front. So that's a look that they've been trying to get more into. They obviously, you'll know about Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne on the inside mm-hmm. as their main two defensive tackles. They also drafted a rookie, Johnny Newton, or Jazon Newton. He goes by Johnny. They drafted him in the second round. And it wasn't really a pick that they needed to take because they had Allen and Payne. But they felt like he was a first-round grade and it fell because of a medical. And so they picked him up. They couldn't pass on him. And he's dealt with a lot of injuries so far in the offseason. He had surgery quite soon after he was drafted. And then he had an injury to his other foot during the offseason that he's kind of been nursing. And he kind of missed the first week and they've kind of been slowly ramping him up. But the last week or two, he's been getting more and more into the rotation. And with him being more and more in the rotation, they've been trying out these looks where they have Allen, Payne, and Newton on the field at the same time. And as I say, Dorrance Armstrong would be the defensive end on one side, and then Frankie Louvu kind of shifts down from being a linebacker to an edge rusher. And I think they see Louvu long-term. They see him kind of like a... I don't want to compare him to Micah Parsons because nobody can be Micah Parsons,
sure.
But they use him in a very similar role to Parsons where he is a linebacker by name, but they move him around and they let him rush from different spots. And he's typically more going forward than he is going backwards.
Absolutely love the Newton pick where it was for value. I thought, you know, him dropping where he did in the second round is fantastic, fantastic selection for Washington. And I also think there's some, we don't have to get into this on this show, but defensive line is a position that is becoming more of a premium position in terms of trying to find good internal defenders. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that you want to try and stop the run with your nickel. You better have really stout guys. And in fact, you better have one good interior guy you can really trust to be on the field for a lot of snaps and be outstanding, one good edge player who sets it like no one else does, and one good linebacker, at least, who stops the run if you really want to do that well. And Newton's a great like starting point for that. He certainly is a fine player. I did want to say, though, or ask the question, really, the Commanders had a very troubling missed tackle rate this year as a team, over 14%, over 14.5%, I believe I just calculated. What's that attributable to? And it seems like a fair amount of it is at every level. They have problems other than Bobby Wagner, who doesn't really have a problem with it. They have problems with it at every level. And maybe talk about how much the missed tackling has hurt them or maybe not this year.
Yeah, so a lot of it kind of stems from what I talked about at corner, where they don't trust their corners. So let me give you the big picture overview. The typical way they want to play this defense is, as I said, they want to play aggressive man coverage. They want to play single high safety. They want to load the box with the extra safety and have everyone going forward, everyone attacking. Now, because they don't have the corners to be able to do that, and they got burned the first week trying to do that. They got very scared of that, and so they have had to change and put two safeties back deep. So quite a lot of the time they've been playing too high, which has left them light in the box. And so to try to make up for the fact that they've been light in the box, they've been doing a lot of run stunts, or just stunts in general, but obviously against the run they turn out to be run stunts. And so you'll see defensive linemen looping one way or the other, and they haven't quite had everything fit up very well. Now, the last few weeks, they've done a better job of it, but they have not fit things well from the second, from the third level, really. That those two deep safeties, particularly Jeremy Chinn, which is a surprise because I thought he'd be better at this type of role. I thought he'd be better at this type of role. He's been a little bit last week against the Browns. He didn't improve, but the first 4 weeks he was really struggling with the speed at which other guys were hitting their stunts. So Quinn and Witt want their guys to just go play light, heads on fire, and you see that with, if you ever watch the Washington defense, watch Frankie Louvu, and you just see he plays like 100 miles an hour. No matter what he's doing, it's 100 miles an hour. And there's a couple of defensive linemen that are starting to buy into that and do the same things. Now, if everyone on the defense plays that way, it fits up nicely. But if you have two or three defensive linemen stunting one way or the other, and they're playing in that style, and you have Frankie Louvu fitting a certain way and he's playing that style, but you have other guys that are playing at a different speed, suddenly the holes start to emerge and suddenly the angles become bad. And that's where guys like Jeremy Chinn or the cornerbacks trying to fit, if it's like a crack toss or whatever, they've not been playing at the same speed that the guys up front have. And that's when the holes emerge, and that's when, Jeremy Chin's missed a few, the corners have missed a few, Louvu has missed a few, and the defensive lineman missed a few tackles. As you say, it has been a problem throughout the whole defense. Now, it has been getting better. As I say, against the Browns, you started to see more guys starting to buy, not necessarily buy in, I think they all bought in. I think they're all feeling more confident in what they're doing, getting on the same page together and understanding the style that they want, that Quinn and Witt are preaching, and the speed that they're being demanded to play at. And they're starting to be more, rather than sitting there trying to think, what am I actually meant to be doing here? They're starting to be more reactive and more confident in what they're doing. And so we saw that a few times that past week, where I mentioned Jeremy Chin was struggling fitting things from deep. He was doing a lot better job of reading things a lot quicker, getting up, filling a lot quicker, and that was helping them do things a lot better. Now, the Browns helped a little bit with the kind of run schemes they did. Washington haven't really stopped any kind of crack toss or sweep, anything that has linemen pulling to the edge and any kind of pin pull. Washington hasn't stopped it this year. And a lot of part of that is that you have one defensive end in Dorrance Armstrong that can hold an edge. If you run to the other edge, you don't really have an established defensive end that is a very good run defender out there yet. And they that's why they've been trying Frankie Louvu out there with us. And they even tried Deron Payne on the edge a few snaps against the Browns and stuff. But when you've got a Dante Fowler that's more of a pass rush guy, or Jamin Davis that isn't really a defensive end at this point and is still learning that position, those guys are getting pinned inside really easy on those crack tosses or pin pulls and sweep plays. And then they lose their edge, and the corners haven't been the best at crack replacing. And they've the safeties haven't necessarily fit them the best. And then you get, as I kind of talked about with Frankie Louvu, plays at a certain tempo. Not everyone matches that tempo, and he will be really aggressive in trying to get outside and stop things. But the rest of it, he'll hit it too quick, and the offense is able to adjust quicker, and the rest of the defense hasn't caught up yet. And so that will create another lane and some more bad angles for the rest of the defense. So it's kind of been a bit of a mess up front. And again, it all kind of stems from the fact that they aren't able to do what they want to do. They aren't able to put Jeremy Chin down in the box, because Jeremy Chin in the box effectively becomes another linebacker with his size. And
he's 6'3", 220 for Ravens fans who wouldn't know. He's played his entire career in the NFC, but he's probably just about the biggest line. Not the biggest linebacker. He'd be not the smallest linebacker, but he's probably the biggest safety in the entire game right now.
Yes, and that is the role that I think they signed him for. And if you watch the Dallas defense of the last few years, they really lacked linebackers. They didn't have any linebackers. And so they were quite often trying to develop these safeties with that similar profile of being 6'2", 6'3", 200 to 220 pounds, 210 to 220 pounds, and playing them as linebackers. And I think that's what they want Jeremy Chin to do. But because they can't trust the corners, they need him to play deep as one of the two deep safeties. So this week, I do wonder whether they will risk it a little bit more, because the rushing attack this week is very different from any kind of rushing attack that they have faced so far. And the added threat of Lamar on top of Derrick Henry and just the Ravens, a normal rushing attack that the Ravens would be able to present, would be pretty tough to defend anyway. But you add in the threat of Lamar, and I think their primary concern is going to be trying to stop the run. And so I do wonder whether this week we'll see more single high stuff and Jeremy Chin down in the box as a specific matchup for this week. But generally speaking, this season, they've been very reluctant to do that because they've not trusted their corners on the outside.
Did want to ask you, I forgot one question I want to ask about the pass rush is, what have they been using in terms of deception? You mentioned stunts. So the other two components are off-ball blitzes. Not talking about how often do they rush five, although I do have an interest in that, but I'm talking about how often do they disguise it well, where they come from off the line of scrimmage at the snap, or off the slot corner, at the slot corner coming directly off his receiver at the snap, rather than showing it early such that it's given away. And then the other part is simulated pressure, because simulated pressure, the Ravens faced an unbelievable amount of it from the Bengals. And actually, the Bengals were quite successful with simulated pressure relative to everything else they did in terms of pass defense.
Yeah, and that simulated pressure is an interesting point to bring up, because that is something they have found some success with. As I kind of mentioned, they've been experimenting with lots of different ways of trying to be able to generate pressure, because Quinn and Witt are all about trying to get to the quarterback and force the ball out quickly. And typically that would be blitz five or six guys and play man coverage. But as I say, the corners can't do that. So they've been trying to find different ways of doing it. And earlier in the season, the way they were trying to do it was fire zones, and it would be, you know, a slot corner would join the front four, or Frankie Louvu would join the front four from the linebacker, or Bobby Wagner would join the front four. Mm-hmm. And occasionally it would be both Louvu and Wagner would kind of cross dog, and maybe a defensive end would drop off, and it would be five that way. Now they got a sack against Kyler Murray and the Cardinals 2 weeks ago with a simulated pressure where they played Tampa 2 behind it. And it was Bobby Wagner blitzing up the middle. It was Bobby Wagner blitzing off the right side of the offensive line. And Jamin Davis, who, as I said, is a linebacker by trade, but has been playing defensive end this year, he dropped off the other edge. And so it was just a simulated pressure with the front four. With four, it was Bobby Wagner. And that got the line was sliding left, and the right tackle ended up having to pick between Armstrong on the edge or Wagner, and he squeezed inside, and that left Armstrong free off the edge, and they got a sack from that. So that was something they found success with against the Cardinals, and they kind of went, "Ooh, that is something we might be able to do." And I think they had six Tampa 2 sim pressures against the Browns last week, and they had some positive plays out of every one. They had two sacks out of them. And they had a dropped interception that Quan Martin, it hit him in the hands and he just dropped it. And it was one of those where you get the old cliche of, if he was any good at catching the ball, you were a receiver, not a defensive back. So, that is something that I think they will try to use more of, because it's one of the few things on defense that they have found success with, where they're able to generate the pressure that they want by attacking protection schemes, but also be relatively safe behind it. And typically when I've seen sim pressures, it's been cover three stuff, and you would think with Dan Quinn's association with the Seahawks and their cover three stuff, you would think that's the way they've gone. But actually the way they've been going has been Tampa 2 stuff, and they've been disguising who exactly gets to which point in the Tampa 2 and who's blitzing from where. And they've done a pretty good job of that. As I say, they had, I think it was six Tampa 2 sim pressures, and two of them were the same, but the rest were unique. So one of them was Bobby Wagner and the defensive end dropping off the other side. One of them was Wagner and Louvu both rushed, and the two defensive ends dropped off. And they had a bunch of different looks in different ways in which way they got to the Tampa 2 on the back end as well, where the Quan Martin interception one, he was showing single high, and he stepped up, and that was actually one of their big nickel packages. So the two other safeties were kind of closer to the line of scrimmage and more in the box, and they sprinted back deep to play the deep halves, and Quan Martin was high and he stepped up, and that formed the Tampa 2 look. So they've been pretty good at disguising that. Schematically, I think they've done a really nice job. They haven't been able to get to what they wanted to get to, and so they're having to try out lots of different things. So it's a roundabout way of saying I can't give you a definitive answer of how they traditionally rush the ball, because they've not been able to play the way they want to. But it does. I do feel like, and I wrote about this Wednesday myself, where they do seem to have found some success with these sim pressures, specifically the Tampa 2 stuff that they've been running with them. And so I think that will be something you'll probably see this week. But I would also expect the Ravens to do a better job of picking that up than Deshaun Watson was terrible with it, and Kyler Murray got spooked by it as well. So I would think Lamar would do a better job against it.
One of the really nice things, it's often done to fool the offensive line as much as it is Lamar, but they had a couple of consecutive completions on one of the drives in Q4, and Lamar on both of them went up to the line of scrimmage and appeared to be assigning blocking, which is not something we have often seen from him. That's not something that I normally associate with him. And a very notable game a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, and I don't know if as a Commanders fan this was in your foci here, but they showed 40 cover zero looks for him for the Dolphins in one Thursday night game. Wow. And they did not decode that at all. And they lost a game at Miami to a bad Dolphins team that they had no business, losing. But so it's been one of the nice things about Lamar in terms of his growth this year has been his ability to do some of that. So that's a very positive step. Take us through the back end, if you would. Who's out there? Who are these guys you don't really trust? And what's going on with the secondary?
Yeah, so they really actually quite like their safety group. We talked about Jeremy Chinn. He's the strong safety, and he's someone that they would like to get in the box a lot more. But they're having to play him deep as part of these two deep stuff. The free safety is Quan Martin. You might know him better as Jartavius Martin. He was a second-round pick 2 years ago now. He came out of Illinois. Did they play in Orange? I can't remember.
Illinois.
Yes. Yeah. So he came out of Illinois, and they did a lot of stuff where he was kind of a nickel, but also kind of a safety. He has quite a lot of range and good instincts at safety, but he's also kind of a little bit smaller, and he likes to mix it up a little bit as a nickel. And when they drafted him last year, Ron Rivera's unit thought he was more of a nickel and tried to play him there. And they kind of struggled with him a little bit. This group seems to think he's a really good free safety, and he has better instincts back there. And he has really good range. But as I say, they've not really been able to show that off because they've been playing too high rather than single high. That's two safeties. They also really like Percy Butler. Percy Butler's another one that's kind of like a Jeremy Chinn type. I don't think he's I think he's 6'2", but I think he might be 230 pounds. So he's a bit heavier. I don't think he's quite as tall. But he's in that same profile of being a bigger bodied safety that's almost more of a linebacker. Now, when Percy Butler was drafted, it was the intention to make him more of a safety, more of a free safety, because he had really good range. But it's so developed that last year he was quite poor in tackling. As the last line of defense, he missed, I think there was like a spell of 3 weeks where he missed two tackles as the last line of defense that ended up giving up 64 yard touchdowns in
wow.
two games over 3 weeks. So they don't trust him as a tackler, or at least they didn't last year. And he kind of switched role into becoming a more of a box safety and a strong safety, which you would think suits his size. And he's developed into quite a nice kind of match man coverage guy. Now, as I say, they want to play man coverage, but they've not been able to trust the corners. But before he gets to the corners, he's someone that would match up quite well on tight ends because he has the size. He's really athletic, and he can actually play coverage. He can play man to man quite well. So he's someone that they like, but they haven't really been able to utilize that skill set. Now, corner, we talked a little bit about Mikey Samristil. He was the second round rookie that they absolutely love, and they feel like long term he's going to be their slot corner. But the way they were playing him, he was just struggling a little bit. He's someone that, if you're unfamiliar with him, he was a receiver in college, and he only switched to the defensive side 2 years ago. He's got great ball skills because he was a receiver. He's just very undersized. And he's still learning the position, and you can tell that there are times he's still learning the position. When he kind of plays off him with vision, he can drive down on things underneath really quickly. He's got a real quick trigger, closes really quickly, and that's when his ball skills come in handy. But when kind of receivers get level with him, or if he's up on the line of scrimmage and press, when guys are even with him, he kind of finds it hard to read the keys of where they're going to, when they're going to make their break and where they're going to go. And he kind of loses guys at the top of routes a little bit. So he's still developing. And so they've moved him from the slot to outside. And
does
part
he,
of why
does
they
he chase, do they chase at all in terms of having their corners move?
Not with Samristil. The one guy that would chase would be Benjamin St. Juiced, who is a very big, long corner, that was drafted in the third round a few years ago. That, the hope was he could be a kind of Richard Sherman-esque kind of guy in terms of profile, big, long, physical, and those long arms give him a really good recoverability. But he's never quite developed into the. At one point, it was going to be he's this big long corner. We'll play him on the line of scrimmage, and he'll be really physical and press coverage. And then they thought, actually, we'll play him in off, and he'll use his length to break on stuff underneath. And he's kind of been caught in between those two different profiles, and he's never really fully developed in either one. Now, they quite like him, and they think he's doing quite well. But he's probably more of a team's second or third corner rather than a number one. And so but because there isn't anyone else, he's having to match up against number one receivers more often than he should. And that's giving him some issues. Mike Evans gave him a lot of issues in the first week against the Bucks. Mike Evans gives a lot of people issues, to be fair, but that's kind of how they're using him. Is occasionally, if they do play man coverage, he will follow. But they won't. It's not that they would have Sam Ristill then follow the number two receiver. It would just be how that matches up on wherever those guys align. But if they do have someone following a number one, it would be St. Juiced. The other corner that would be in the rotation would be Emmanuel Forbes, first round pick a year ago. And I liked him a lot coming out of college too. He was very misprofiled by the previous regime. I saw him as this kind of zone corner playing off with vision and match stuff. And Rivera said after the draft, that's what they were going to do with him. And then they decided to try to play a lot of man coverage last year, and he got burned a lot and lost his confidence. And this year, this regime also wants to play man coverage, and he's kind of struggled a little bit. And then he got injured. I think he broke his thumb or did some sort of ligament in his hand. I think he had surgery, and he's playing with a cast on. But that was when they moved Mikey Sanders still out from the slot to outside, and Noah Igbinogene moved into the slot. And since then, Forbes has come back, and he's still playing with a cast on his hand, but he's available. But he hasn't been able to get on the field. And I don't think they particularly trust him right now either.
Going into this game, because they have to do one of two things against Lamar. You either have to spy him or you have to play a lot of zone. I would think, wouldn't this be a great game to try and get Forbes back confident again?
You would think so. And maybe that is a route they want to go with, but I think just the fact that they have been they found some success the past few weeks. Like the first few weeks, the defense was really, really bad, and I think they were surprised with how well the offense managed to kind of carry the team against the Bengals in week three, and they managed to win that shootout. And then in week four against the Cardinals, against an offense that potentially is pretty tough, they tried to change things up, and that's when Forbes missed out and Sam still played outside, and they kind of just wanted to roll with, okay, this is kind of working for us. They did a little bit better against the Cardinals and this week against the Browns. Now, I will say Deshaun Watson was as bad as I've seen any quarterback play last week. So I wouldn't take too much from that, but they did find a bit of a formula that was working for them. And they were improving compared to what they were at the start of the season, where even the Giants were able to move the ball on them very easily. The Bucks and the Bengals both put up 35 points on them very easily. So the last 2 weeks they've shown some improvement. So I think they will probably stick with Sam Ristill on the outside and leave Forbes on the bench unless someone gets injured. I don't think any of those guys in the secondary have shown any injuries the last few weeks. So,
other than Forbes.
So, I think Forbes will probably remain the odd man out there. But you're right in thinking that is a good way of thinking. And I think if you wanted to get Forbes on the field and try to boost his confidence, if you're going to play a bunch of zone, that would be a good way to do it. But I think they like Sam Ristill more because he's their own draft pick. So they want him on the field, and they don't quite think he's suited to the slot yet because of his struggles so far. So they're protecting him a little bit by putting him on the outside, and Forbes is not a slot corner. So they're sticking with Noah Igbinogene on the inside, and they're still trying to mix in man coverage every now and again, especially if they get some stops on first and second down and it gets third and long, that's when you will see them go man coverage and blitz quite a lot, like you would see that Cowboys defense under Quinn do. I think you will probably see Forbes on the sideline more often than not.
All right. Absolutely fantastic rundown on the players. I don't do score predictions on this show. I'm actually really kind of just bothered by the fact when people ask me for that, but maybe pick a player on each side of the ball that you think matches up particularly well against the Ravens.
Yeah. So I'm going to take a cheap way out on offense and say, I think Jaden Daniels matches up quite well, just mm-hmm. because a quarterback that can run is always very, very hard to defend regardless of who they play against. And obviously the Ravens defense will have more practice than most, given they spend all offseason practicing against Lamar Jackson. But that does not make it any easier just because you know it's coming and you've had practice. That doesn't mean you're going to be able to stop the guy when he's on the field. And Jaden Daniels has been phenomenal as a runner, both, as I say, as a in the running game, helping the run game as a design quarterback run, but also as a scrambler. And he's picked up a lot of explosive plays as a scrambler when a lot of other quarterbacks, maybe only Lamar, would be able to avoid some of the sacks that he's avoided and turn them into positive plays. So I'm going to take the low-hanging fruit there and say that I think his ability with his legs specifically will be very hard for the Ravens to match up against. On the defensive side of the ball, this is a hard one because the defense hasn't been playing great. The one guy that has been playing, there's two guys that have been playing to a good level, and that's the linebackers, Frankie Louvin and Bobby Wagner. Wagner has been phenomenal. Now, he's not the Bobby Wagner of old in terms of coverage, but as a run defender, he is still so quick in diagnosing things. Like, even though he has lost a step from what he once had, he's so quick mentally that he's still taking his second step by the time everyone else has taken their first. And so he's diagnosing things incredibly fast, filling the holes incredibly fast, and making plays in the run game. So he will always be a problem in the run game for any offense. Frankie Louvu is their guy on defense. That, as I mentioned earlier, he kind of plays the Michael Parsons role. Now, he's not Michael Parsons, but he plays that role of being this linebacker that you can move all around the defense. Sometimes he'll drop off into coverage. Sometimes he'll match up man-to-man. A lot of the times he'll be used as a blitzer, or he'll even just line up on the edge and rush off the edge. We finally saw him get some reward for his efforts last week against the Browns. He had 2.5 sacks. He gave the rookie right guard that they had in, I can't remember his name, was it Zinter? Something like that, the Browns have. He gave him a real hard time. I think 2 of his 2.5 sacks came against that rookie right guard. So if there's a weak link on that Ravens offensive line, they will happily move Louvu around and rush him from any gap against any lineman. And that will be the guy that they trust to win those matchups. So Louvu would be the guy to watch out for on defense.
All right. Outstanding. Just great stuff, Mark. One more time, where can people contact you online and read your stuff?
Yep. So on Twitter, or I guess X, no, I'm going to call it Twitter still. It's Mark Bullock NFL. And then my Substack, where I do all my breakdowns of Commander stuff, is called Bullock's Film Room. And you can find that at markbullock.substack.com.
All right. Outstanding. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. We're looking for shorter content. This was one of the longest Know Your Foes ever, but it was tremendously packed with good information, and that's why we love having Mark on the show. Mark, thanks again for coming on.
Of course, anytime.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.